1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Admitted white supremacist Patrick Crucius is sentenced to 90 consecutive life sentences in federal prison for the 2019 racist attack at a Texas Walmart. Reporter Chris Fox has the story.
The judge recommending Crucius receive mental health treatment while in custody at the Supermax prison in Colorado. Crucius pleaded guilty in February to 90 federal charges after prosecutors took the death penalty off the table. The district attorney in El Paso says the federal sentence won't prevent him from seeking the death penalty in state court. That trial could happen as early as 2024.
23 people were killed in what's considered one of the worst hate crimes in U.S. history, where Crucius targeted Hispanic shoppers at the Walmart in El Paso. Police have arrested a suspect in Sunday's mass shooting at a block party in Baltimore. CBS's Elaine Quijano reports.
Officers say they've taken a 17-year-old into custody. He's facing several charges, including possession of a firearm by a minor, assault weapon possession, and reckless endangerment. Sunday's shooting killed two people and left 28 others, including children, injured. There's no word yet on a motive.
There may have been additional shooters as well. The Biden administration has decided to provide cluster munitions to Ukraine. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan defends the decision.
We base our security assistance decision on Ukraine's needs on the ground. And Ukraine needs artillery to sustain its offensive and defensive operations.
CBS's Cammie McCormick has details on these controversial weapons.
Cluster munitions are banned by many countries, and the UN Secretary General is warning countries against using them. His spokesman, Farhan Haq.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And so, as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
The Pentagon insists these have a reduced dud rate, meaning fewer unexploded rounds that can result in civilian deaths. Cluster bombs open in the air to hit multiple targets.
Heat, and a lot of it. Here's Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen.
East of the Mississippi, it's going to be a combination of heat and humidity that's going to make it feel like it's in the 90s and even over 100 in some spots.
The D.C. Bar Association has recommended former President Trump's personal attorney Rudy Giuliani be disbarred.
The bar's hearing committee made the recommendation after finding that Giuliani made hyperbolic claims of election fraud during legal proceedings in Pennsylvania. The committee said it can't conclude that Giuliani lied to the judge, but said his claims were, quote, utterly false and recklessly so.
CBS's Christopher Cruz. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Monday, July 10th. In Wood County, the Residential Option Committee will meet at 9 a.m., as well as the Public Safety Committee. The Property and Information Technology Committee meeting will follow at 9:30. The Operations Committee will meet at 11. The Wisconsin Rapids Park and Recreation Commission will meet at 4. and the Wood County State Wildlife Advisory Committee will meet at 5:30. The Wisconsin Rapids School District Board Committee meetings begin at 6. In Portage County, the Stevens Point Board of Water and Sewerage Commissioners will meet at noon, the Airport Commission at 12:30, and the County Finance Committee will meet at 5. The Personnel Committee will meet at 6, the Public Policy and General Government at 6:10, and the Finance Committee at 6:20. The Board of Public Works will meet at 6:35. In Adams County, the Property and Recreation Committee will meet at 2, and the Health and Human Services meeting will be at 4. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight, otherwise cloudy. Lows around 59, westerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, slight chance for scattered rain showers. Highs level off around 79. Lows dip down to about 53. Tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 7th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 3:30, we're going to welcome in our good friend Stephanie Lund, events coordinator, and Sarah Wheeler, community health worker, with our Southwood County YMCA. Looking forward to talking with both of them. Right now, we have with us on the phone Wisconsin State Representative Scott Krug. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, James. How are you doing?
Doing all right. We record this in the morning, so it's afternoon by now. Happy afternoon, everybody. We'll get that out of the way.
It is a hard habit to break. I apologize.
About a year from now, I will probably start remembering and getting it right. Scott, how was your fourth?
That's awesome, man. I tell you, it's my favorite day of the year, right? And it's nice that it was kind of a Tuesday thing for the 4th, because that means there was stuff Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So it was kind of cool to have those 4 days of the independence celebration going on. So it was fun to get around everywhere.
It was nice to be able to enjoy the holiday a little bit. And then really, I kind of feel like it was not an easy week, but it was a little bit easier to ride into the week with this and everything.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's nice to get that midsummer break here, and all the days are finally getting shorter, and people start thinking about getting back to school in a month or two here. It's just kind of nice to have that big, long weekend in the middle of all of it, and everybody's getting back to their relaxing and having fun for a few more months, and we're right back to the grind again.
Scott, I'd like to start off. We're going to talk about the budget and housing and some other things, but I think this kind of opening just leads into some of that. Recently, you introduced a bill that you've been working on for a while, AB 266, now known as the 2023 Wisconsin Act 16. Can we talk about this a little bit to the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the bigger bills I think we'll get done this session is So Act 16 is part of our overall housing bill, and one of the challenges we've been having with workforce housing is when developers come into communities and set a project in front of a community, there have been circumstances, not necessarily here, but in other parts of the state, where municipalities say, yeah, those were the rules when you brought us the project, but we're going to change those rules now and make you do this, 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 and this, which drives up the cost of development through the roof. And when cost of development goes through the roof, it's not like a developer and investors just eat that cost. It gets passed on to the homeowner, to the renter, to anybody who is going to be the end consumer of that product you're creating. So that's one of the things we've been seeing with pricing being so high for housing, with one of the problems we see with rents being so high, is it just costs developers so dang much to put in a new subdivision or a new house or whatever it might be. So Act 16 basically says, hey, developers, if you want to come into a municipality and develop a project and we have rules laid out for it already, whatever project you bring to us under the current rules, we have to approve it. I mean, we can't just change rules midstream anymore. We've got to give some of these folks some certainty to keep these costs down and get these projects moving, because I'll tell you, we're probably at a 60-year low for our housing inventories right now, and it's just costing people an arm and a leg just to find anything decent to move into.
So with this action, Because to me, once a month we have a Let's Talk Real Estate, and when we talk with our friends at Cole Banker, and I've been doing this for 4 or 5 years, maybe even a little longer, and for years, the common theme is we don't have enough inventory.
Yeah.
The other I would say right under that is workers to be able to build these houses.
Well, and that's finally the thing that's changed nicely over the last, I'd say, 6 to 9 months, is we finally have, you know, developers and contractors who are getting some of that time freed up. We're finally seeing all of those prices for all those supplies coming down from the COVID highs. So, you know, a regular piece of OSB sheeting is back to normal pricing for flooring, and for drywall being back to normal pricing for walls. And so we're finally getting to the point where supplies are good, workforce is getting better, but now we don't have developers wanting to come into our communities because they just don't know what the rules are going to be when they get there to put a project on the doorstep. So I think, you know, that triangle of housing is absolutely right, and our friends at Coldwell know it all too well, is that, you know, when you can finally get the perfect storm here and get something put together, especially adding in one-time money from the state with the other 5 housing bills that are out there, that we can finally inject some money to, you know, bring this market back to stability. I think that's a great thing for everybody. I think the bigger challenge, even with our workforce housing, is that we don't have the capability for seniors to make the choice to downsize because there's just nowhere for them to go that's affordable. So if they're looking to sell a 3-bedroom, 2-bath to get into something 2-bed, 1-bath, they'll make a mint on selling their house, but they're just going to put it right back into buying a house because there's so low inventories right now that prices are ridiculous. So it's been great to see this bipartisan effort from the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor all get on board to put this $550 million into various avenues of housing options and opportunities for everybody in the state of Wisconsin. And I think we'll see more of this session even.
Scott, I wanted to get into the budget. Governor Evers recently signed this bipartisan budget. We've heard a lot about it, conversation. Where you fall on this and how are you feeling about it?
Well, you know, for the most part, the budget that we do every other year is about 75% of the work that the legislature will get done over a biennium. So, I mean, it is a behemoth of a task. So we started basically last October asking for input and, you know, finally getting all this put together and crafted and across the finish line. So I'm glad it's done on time. You know, and I'm glad there were very few vetoes on the governor's part. I wish some of the Democrat friends that we have would have voted for the bill, but they didn't, which doesn't much matter because it got passed and signed. My concern is a couple of those vetoes were tough to swallow. But, you know, for the most part, it's a 95% good thing in my eyes. I think the 400-year provision that he created with his pen, I think, was a little out of school on how, you know, governors should operate with their veto pen. But, you know, legislatures will go back and adjust those things over the course of the next 2 years and 4 years. And if anybody doesn't know, the provision I'm talking about is where the governor crossed out a couple of numbers and a hyphen to basically extend levy ability for schools for 400 years with the veto pen that wasn't in the original budget. So that'll get problematic down the road if the legislature doesn't deal with it. But like I said, every 2 years, the legislature can go back and adjust. Every session, we get a chance to do bills. So it's on the whole, it is a good thing. It's massive amounts of money for shared revenue for all our municipalities. It's funding for the housing things we talked about. It's historic funding for education. And for my district in particular, the biggest thing in the budget has always been transportation. And this budget finally hits the number on the head, I think, because we've got we went a little above and beyond where the governor asked us to on transportation, because I wanted to specifically try to carve out some money for A Street repairs that we've been talking about for months and months and months. Mm-hmm. So we got $15 million extra in the state highway rehab program. And in the budget, you can't necessarily say this money goes directly for this project, but we've made it pretty clear to DOT going into this that we were going to try to get some extra money to get some of this A Street stuff moved up, you know, because it's not on the books until 2028. So I think we'll finally get some headway there, get that done a little bit earlier. And I think overall the budget is actually a good bill for all of us in Wisconsin.
What are some other highlights to you from the budget, Scott?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, I think, is, you know, that I wanted to really kind of delve into a little bit was, you know, public safety. And we talk a lot about how we've got problems in our prisons. We've got 50% vacancy rates with our correctional officers because we don't pay them enough. We don't value our DAs and public defenders enough to help keep people the ability to have a speedy trial under the U.S. Constitution. So this budget really invests in all of it. It makes sure that public defenders and DAs and ADAs are getting paid closer to what the private sector would pay them, so we can keep them in our process here in the public realm. And it also makes sure that we give our correctional workers, because I've got a huge correctional worker population on the east side of my district in Wautoma to Red Granite, it gives them a $13 per hour raise off the bat, because we see such massive, massive holes in coverage, and we're cruising for a bruising if we don't get some more people involved and interested in corrections here in the state of Wisconsin. So I think that's the one that you'll probably hear the least about, that probably is going to have the biggest impact, is the investment into the criminal justice system from top to bottom, whether it's police and first responders all the way to DAs and prosecutors, and on the back end, correctional staff is probably the biggest thing you're not going to hear about in this budget.
Was there anything in the budget regarding child care?
There is, and that was one of the things that people talk about a lot is, you know, during COVID, the federal government sent a ton of money to the states to do some child care things, and the big conjecture in this budget was, well, the legislature didn't keep the program that the governor created with the federal money. Well, you know, sometimes when federal money runs out, we can't. And that's the problem with one-time federal money. You don't go creating programs with one-time money if you want the program to continue. But this budget still invests another $100 million into child care. It changes the eligibility for people to receive the subsidy from 133% of the poverty line to 200% of the federal poverty line, which expands options for people to receive a subsidy. It invests in the facilities. It invests in finding money for slots for kids in our communities. So I think the big conjecture out there is that just because the federal program dollars ran out is that we didn't invest anything into child care, which was ridiculous on its face, because there's an extra $100 million in there for child care subsidies for our workforce to stay back into the workplace. So I'm excited that we got something in there. We've still got plenty of time in this budget to keep going through and expand on this revolving loan fund that we did, that the governor actually did a partial veto to turn that revolving loan fund we did for child care centers into a grant program. So there's $15 million coming back for grants for facilities as well. So I think there was a lot of, you know, misnomer out there on what was actually done with child care.
As far as, you know, anything that could happen, develop, as you were touching on there, in the future or even in this cycle, are you seeing things, or are there things being talked about with you and your colleagues that could be on the rise, could be in the future?
Yeah, and one of the biggest things is one of the bills I've been working on for about 4 or 5 years now is this fiscal cliff bill that would help kind of solve some of these problems we have with people wanting to develop their skills and abilities and add hours to their weekly work totals that wouldn't affect their child care subsidies or wouldn't affect their food share number or wouldn't affect their W-2 numbers, to help them stay more into the workforce and take more opportunities. Because right now, if you go to Quick Trip or Walmart or Walgreens or CVS, and you know, now they're starting at $12.50 to $15 an hour, and say you worked 20 hours a week and you received a certain number of child care subsidies and food share subsidies based on that 20 hours a week that you had, and your boss says, hey, love your work, we want you to come back here and work 40 hours a week next week into the rest of your time with us, you have to make a choice at this point. Now you say, well, is it worth me losing my child care subsidy or my food share to work those extra hours this week? Or, you know, what do I do? So the bill that we've got out there would lessen that problematic choice to say, okay, for the first 6 months of your new opportunity, we're going to give you a chance to save and plan and budget while you're coming down off of your benefits, instead of just ending them immediately, because too many people are forced with this ridiculous choice of not being able to work just to be able to still afford to take care of the family. So I think that fiscal cliff bill will help on the child care side of things as well. And make sure that people still have those options available. So I'm looking forward to that going this fall, too.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Wisconsin Assembly District 72 Representative Scott Krug. Scott and I have been doing this a while together, and whether it is you or Katrina or Patrick or anybody that we talk to, you understand how I do these interviews. I don't do debate or, you know, radio. I find it very old and tiresome, and you know, I take this side, you take that side, Scott. We fight, and what do we get? What comes of it?
Yeah.
Even the big news outlets like Fox and CNN have gotten that, and people are tired of that. So what I do like to use this opportunity for, though, is to not only pick your brain and talk about some of these things, but discuss bills that don't always get talked about very much. And I don't want to throw a curveball at you, but but you know your job pretty good. So are you familiar with Assembly Bill 300?
By number, no. By title, probably.
Okay. It's the one that involves a tax on election workers.
Oh, yeah, right, yep. Yeah, okay. Very familiar with that. We heard it in my committee not too long ago here, yep.
Yeah, and I felt like the story didn't get covered that much, and some of it's understandable. There's so much going on. I'm not trying to I pick on news outlets plenty. I'm not picking on them on this one. I do think, though, it's one of those things that should be brought to attention a little bit more, and we should talk about it a little bit more, and I wanted to get your feedback on this one.
You know why you didn't hear about it at all? It's because it's bipartisan, bicameral, everybody agrees with it, so there's just no meat on the bone for the media.
Right, right.
It's weird, right? I mean, it is a huge bill, and it goes to the heart of what we talked about with elections, and that was why I told the speaker that I wanted this committee. I said, it's not my background, it's not my education, but it's something that I'm passionate about, is making sure that we restore everybody's faith in the elections, whether there's somebody out there that thought it was stolen, blah, 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 all that stuff. Doesn't matter to me. I want to make sure that everybody feels secure in this process, because we lose way too many volunteers because of all the conjecture that's out there. And when we don't have volunteers working in our polls and volunteers helping with all of these campaigns and everything else, then the system falls apart. So this is one of the bills we have in this committee. I told the authors of the bill, I said, you're not going to hear bills in my committee and campaigns and elections unless you've got a Republican senator, a Republican assembly person, a Democrat senator, and a Democrat assembly person. There's got to be four co-authors on any bill that comes before my committee, because the truth of the matter is, whether you like the place we're in or not with our governor or our legislature, we do have a split government. And to get any of these bills signed, there has to be absolute agreement. So when this bill came forward, we heard it in the committee. We had quite a spirited debate. I think in the end, this bill gets through unanimously out of the Assembly and the Senate, because it came through our committee unanimously. It's a great bill to help restore some confidence for our poll workers to make sure they know that they're safe. So I think, you know, in the end, we're going to see probably a dozen, maybe a dozen and a half bills come out of campaign and elections this session that'll be bipartisan, bicameral, that'll actually be able to get signed by the governor, that'll help restore faith in our electoral process for anybody who lost their faith in it.
And certainly that part I don't take lightly, but I really was focused on keeping election volunteers safe. Seems a very heavy part of this that I think that is one of the biggest parts of this that should have been covered, I would think, right away. And I appreciate what you said there about the meat on the bone and the not, it's not the low hanging fruit that a lot of the media likes to pull on. And you can go to. I'm curious, do you guys talk about that stuff from time to time? Because especially here in Wisconsin, I think that you guys are making it really hard for people to be able to use the low-hanging fruit of, I just hate the other side just for hating them. I'm seeing a lot of getting along in Madison right now. I'm seeing a lot of purple happening. I don't know if that's really good for the big news outlets out there, man. I don't know.
It is not. You should see some of the stuff they're scraping for right now. And I don't want to point out names of the media, but people will know them who read them. But they are scraping for some really weird stuff. Like, there's a special election coming up down in southeast Wisconsin for an assembly seat that I almost said the name of the outlet in Milwaukee, that could not cover any of the substance of the campaign whatsoever, but had to go back 25 years for an event that somebody attended that was controversial. And the guy's like, well, yeah, I might have been there. Because there's nothing for them to report, because we are doing everything we need to get done in Madison. There's agreement on huge things like the shared revenue, the school funding, the voucher programming, and you name it, everything that we've done the last 3 months up until the point of some of these vetoes, everybody was kumbaya and happy and ready to get along. So now, honestly, that the state budget is done, tucked away, put to bed. You know, 75% of what we need to get done is done. I think you'll probably see some more arguing because people are going to want to try to prop up their next campaign, blah, blah, blah. But the work is done. The things that people sent us to Madison to get done got done, which honestly is not always the case for us in the Assembly and the Senate and the governor's seat. So when the three of us are all getting along together, and I'll tell you honestly, it's probably more the Assembly and the Senate arguing at this point than it is the Assembly and the governor or the Senate and the governor. So when we're all getting along and getting things done, I mean, that's why we call the budget a budget for us all. I mean, we all got something we wanted out of it. The governor got to sign it. The governor got to make some changes. The legislature got some very, very big things done. You know, but the only people that can't take much credit for it are the people that voted against it. But still, there are things that people who vote against budgets can take credit for helping with and say, I supported this while I didn't support that. So there's just going to be a lot less fireworks in the newspapers and, you know, TV programs for a few months, which is great because you're not going to have a shortage of that when it comes to the 2024 campaign because you've got the U.S. Senate seat, the presidency. I mean, everybody's up in the legislature. So take this calmness and this quiet and enjoy it for a while.
Well, and in that meantime, maybe some journalists out there can get back to doing their job and actually reporting and actually having to do some digging and actually talk to sources and do some real work instead of just reading something they got off the AP or something like that. Maybe we'll see a little more of that, too. I
hope so, because all this gotcha stuff is all, it's finally done. So it's great.
I don't know how much you've had a chance, especially it's only some parts of it have only broken over the last 24 hours. But I do want to talk about in a roundabout way what's going on in Emory with their mayor, with their police chief, with a lot of the resignations that have happened overnight. For those that did not hear, Chad Leonard has resigned as the mayor of the city of Emory, and where a lot of this is coming from. Now, why they did or that is a little of where I want to go more so. Than I don't want to be too specific with this because there's still details to come out and sort of, and there's also a lot of things that we've already covered, you and I. But we have a common theme of something that I bring up with you and all of our representatives and even our police department and our sheriff's department of what we're doing and the younger generation seeing how we're doing these games, politics, police force, any of this stuff, and how many of them are going to want to do the jobs. Where we see a mayor brought in, the social media backlash, all this other stuff, and finally at the end of the day, he's like, you know what, this ain't worth it. This is all right. Dealing with all this is not worth it. How are we ever to find a balance with this where we can hold our representatives and our police forces and all this accountable like they should be, but also being able to be like, hey, we're not going to act like children either.
You know, and I talk about quite a bit with you about how we have the greatest process in the history of humanity, but it's messy. It's just fine. I mean, the mess is what makes it great. And anytime we see part of the process burn down, there's always a regrowth and there's always something that comes out of it. And it's always this cycle that we talk about a lot is, yeah, it looks bad right now, but it'll grow back. So in those communities, when those things happen, you know, kind of looks like it's, you know, kind of burned to the ground type of thing, you're going to see people who are conscientious step up. It's always my optimistic nature. And it's always, you know, people dig at me once in a while for it. But I always tell people it always works out in the end. No matter what, because whether you think somebody's got bad motives, and we've got plenty of those in Madison too, there's always going to be somebody behind them who says, that's not right. We need to do this better. So those are some of those people that step up to end up on our county boards, village boards, serving as mayors, you know, all those types of people who in the end will advance into the process and become state reps and state senators and governors. And those are kind of the places that I always spend a lot of time with fellow county board members, or city council members, trying to help them learn outside of their realm what the opportunities for them can be. So we're always like developing a bench, like in baseball, right? Yeah. Like a triple A team, like a double A team. We always want to keep those folks and friends close because we're always going to need those people to keep stepping up. So when there's people who are just too intimidated or too, you know, put off by the process and they step out, that's okay. I mean, it's not always meant for everybody. We don't all have as thick of skins as we need to in politics, but that is the way our system was set up, is that if you're going to be involved in politics, there are different rules. right? I mean, you've got to be able to take more heat than anybody else for anything else ever, because our Constitution was set up that libel and slander don't even apply to you in the same way they do the regular public. So there's going to be days and weeks and months and years where you just take so much crap from people that you don't think it's going to be worth it. And I've been there. I've gone through that too. But you just have to stand your ground, tell people why you're doing what you're doing. Not what you're doing all the time, but why you're doing what you're doing. Those things will calm down. And if they don't, and you go, somebody else will step up. It's just the way it's always worked. It's the way it always will work in this process we have.
Agree with you. I if I could just piggyback off of that, I am encouraged also by the younger generation and so many of them getting into politics younger. You've got the young mayor in Florida in situations like that. We've got a couple of stories here in the Midwest of young people getting into politics and handling it, I think, in a lot of the way that most of us were hoping to see politics go and the direction that it was supposed to go all along. And I think there's some encouragement in that.
There always is, and I always talk about it. There are days and weeks and months, like I said, it's going to just be crap. It's just going to suck. It's just going to be the worst thing you ever thought you've ever done in your life. But then, you know, all of those seeds that you plant, they all start growing. You start cultivating them. You start, you know, processing them. They turn into a final product you can be proud of, and you want that feeling again. Mm-hmm. You want to start planting more seeds and getting more things done. So once you're in it for a while and you see what success can look like and feel like, you want to stay. And then you find ways to make sure that people know the story of the why that you're doing things. And I think all of those things we're seeing even now in Madison, we're starting to get some of those agreements done. And I think people back home, especially in municipalities, are going to say, hey, that's great. I want to be a part of that. So you'll start seeing more challengers in assembly seats and Senate seats. And, you know, you'll see all of these successes locally turn into, you know, good public servants into the future.
Scott, always good talking with you. If people want to reach out to you, talk with you more, how can they do that?
Yeah, cell phone's always on, 715-323-3293.
Always appreciate the time, Scott. We'll talk more next month.
You bet. Take care.
You too. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine coming up right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in Central Wisconsin. Wisconsin DHS wants your input on how to invest funds to prevent children and teens from becoming addicted to nicotine. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services will hold three listening sessions to get ideas from Wisconsin residents on how to use the nearly $15 million we've received in settlement funds from Juul. Juul's predatory marketing drove an increase in youth exposure and addiction to nicotine. The listening sessions will be in July and August. Visit dhs.wisconsin.gov for more information. The Rudolph Volunteer Fire Department Street Dance is tomorrow, July 8th. The event begins with a parade down Main Street at 3:30. Food and refreshments will be available before and during the parade. The Rudolph Volunteer Fire Department will be selling refreshments and will also have activities for the kids. The band Southbound will play from 5 to 10, and there will be fireworks from the Braddock Company at dusk. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight, otherwise cloudy. Lows around 59, westerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow, slight chance for scattered rain showers. Highs level off around 79, lows dip down to about 53. Tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
Welcome back to Monday Magazine, everybody. Hope you're having a great one out there. Happy July 7th to you, 3:30 on the clock. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. Right now, we're going to talk with some great people, good people, wonderful people from our friends from the South Oconee YMCA. We have with us Stephanie Lund, Events Coordinator. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And we have Sarah Wheeler, Community Health Worker.
Hi.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Appreciate you guys being here. And so much, just right away, want to thank you and your staff over at the Y. We have nothing but love and respect for our Y and all the great things that it brings to our area. I know for me, I go past that building every day, and it's been a couple of years now, mm-hmm. and it has not gotten old to me. I still look at it, and it reminds me of a building I would see in my old neck of the woods in Chicago or something. And to have that right here in our area is such a gift to our community. And we see the community respond to that. They have attended. They're using it. Mm-hmm. I never see that building without cars in front of it. It's really nice to see. It's great to have you guys here to be able to take a little more time to talk about some of the great things we have over there. Stephanie, I'm going to put you on the spot first.
Okay.
Don't worry. I will get to Sarah. I will put her on.
Totally fine.
Sarah's fine with us taking the whole 20-some minutes with
sure.
you, Steph. Stephanie, if you don't mind, I do this from time to time. Every once in a while, I have to ask hard questions. I have to. That's part of my journalistic duty. What is Pickleball Jamboree? I can't find a lot of information on this, and I'm very curious. This is the hard questions we have to ask around here, Stephanie. What is Pickleball Jamboree?
Okay, a Pickleball Jamboree is basically like a tournament. A lot of tournaments, it's a double tournament. So you have to find a partner, and you rotate and play with your partner. A Jamboree is where you sign up as an individual, and you get to play with everybody else in your division. So you'll get 8 games in and rotate and play through. So it gives people a chance that if you don't have a consistent partner you play with, I want to play pickleball, so I'm going to sign up today and get to play with everybody else.
I might see you out there, because I've been wanting to do this too, and it seemed like a really fun way to do this. And I did look into it and did find some information that was right there for me at the YMCA's website, swcymca.org. We'll give that email address, our website address again before we wrap up. Pickleball is arguably the fastest growing sport in the world right now.
Yes,
like not just here in the States, but around the world. Mm-hmm. We're seeing old malls being converted into pickleball courts. Mm-hmm. We thankfully don't really have to do that around here. We've got our handful of pickleball courts. One of the cool aspects of this to me, as somebody who was just kind of looking at it from the outside, I know a lot of pickleball players, but they tend to play together a lot. Mm-hmm. The idea to get to play with somebody different, you might learn new things, or you might be able to teach new things. While it is a growing sport, it's still a growing sport. It's still one of those things where it might not be common knowledge, all the rules and that, and just even different techniques of how to hit the ball or how to receive a pally, rally, any of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun, and we're hoping we can get a decent amount of people from other areas as well, so that you're not just playing the same people you play at the same park. You're getting others from outside and be able to interact with each other.
We'll do our best to send some people your way. when it comes to this, is there any registration, any requirements to it or anything age-wise or anything?
So the registration is open right now. The registration ends July 23rd, and minimum of 10-year-olds. Mm. So we do. I actually have 4 kids of my own, and our 8-year-old does currently play. Mm-hmm. But, 10-year-olds, because they're going to be playing with adults.
Yeah,
but they do need to register. You can register on our website. And there's different divisions you can sign up for. You have your beginners, your 3.0 level. Then we do 3.25, 3.5, 3.75, 4.0, and 4.25+. So there's a lot of different skill range. So you can choose which one you feel is more comfortable for you.
The one of the bigger events for our Y and really in our area is coming up. You got your annual golf outing right around the corner.
Yes, we do. Yeah, that is on Monday, August 7th, and it's over at the Ridges Golf Course. And this is an annual event. All of the proceeds go towards our annual campaign, so it's one that supports our community. It's a great event. We usually have about 116 golfers, so we'd love to see that number grow even more this year. But a lot of people in the community support it and come on out. It's great.
Yeah, and part of the reason we love our Y, we back our Y, is our Y loves and backs us. The Y is one of those go-to places for me when I'm talking about buying local, supporting local. Personally, with my money, I like to buy and purchase and go to places in town here that do that, that put back into the community. The Y is one of the number one things, one of the number one places that has always done that. Even before we had the new big, beautiful building and all that, the Y has always been really good about it. This golf outing is such a big part of that.
Absolutely. Yes, it's definitely our biggest event. Biggest fundraiser that we have in our community, so we can definitely support more people.
And this golf classic, it's for all types of golfers. You want to golf alone, you want to golf with a team, correct?
Absolutely, yes. You can sign up for an individual if you don't have a group of people. We will put you together in a team. We have different games that will happen on different holes on the golf course. It'll just be a lot of fun.
Where is the event taking place? Can we get the date and times again?
Yes, it's Monday, August 7th over at the Ridges Golf Course here in Wisconsin Rapids. And registration begins at 10, and we have an 11 o'clock shotgun start, so it's an 18-hole scramble.
Mm-hmm. It's one of these events that brings us all together. We encourage you to be a part of this event. Find out more, go into the WISE website, swcymca.org. And speaking of events, and big events, and events that we look forward to every year, I would put in the top five events, way up there, is the Bridge to Bridge run walk that we have. This one is only builds more and more every year. It seems like there's more and more people that are talking about it or are going to be a part of the event. Let's dive into that one.
Absolutely. So our Bridge to Bridge run this year is on Saturday, August 19th. It starts at Witterfield, kind of goes around the river and around the community, and then finishes back at Witterfield as well. We are offering a 5K and a 10K run or walk if you prefer. And it's definitely, this program is run for a cause. So it supports our Live Strong program. It's just a great event. With registrations, $30 a person, you get a t-shirt, you get a finisher's medal, we have post-event snacks and refreshments, everyone gets a race bib, it is timed so you can figure out your time and all of that as well. So it's just a great event.
We love these events in our area that speak to the runner as well as the person that just likes to be involved with these things. We've got a lot of runners out there, marathon people that like to be timed on this, and it's good reps for them, as well as people who just looking to get out, maybe take the kids for a stroll or something, or even just what I hear from people over the years is the organic conversations that happen, the running into so-and-so that you haven't seen in years, mm-hmm. and some of that. And all of this, as Stephanie said, to help Live Strong. Can we touch on what that is for those that may not know, Stephanie?
So our Live Strong program is those that have battled cancer. And so we're supporting them, helping them become healthy and strong. It's a great program. It's a free program that we offer at the YMCA.
Mm-hmm. And encourage people to look into that more on that if it applies to you, if it can help you.
Absolutely.
It's a really good program that you guys have. Stephanie, as far as, I mean, these are all huge, big events. I imagine that as much as you want to look ahead, you got these going on right now. When it came to the prepping for everything from the Jamboree to the Bridge to Bridge, how much time, how long does it go, or how long of the year do you put into these events? Like, we'll go with the annual golf outing. Does that start like the day after the last golf outing ended and you start planning?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. So once it's done, we kind of recap everything and then it's hit the ground running again, working with the golf courses and letting people know, hey, put this on the calendar for next year. It's a great event, so absolutely.
I like people to be able to look behind the curtain a little bit and know how much work goes into these events. We put so much into them, and then one day, and it's gone. That's almost a year's worth of work going into that one day. We don't usually get enough time to appreciate all the work that it takes to get into that event. And that certainly goes to you, your staff, the whole staff at the Y, and the volunteers out there.
Absolutely.
We'll touch more on volunteering before we wrap up today and encourage people to do that. But Stephanie, thank you. As far as future events and different things coming up, are you guys hard at work at that?
We are. We're going to add some new events this year. We have a mother-daughter pajama party we're going to have, trying to create more events for families to get together and create memories together. We'll have a fun father-son game night out at Camp Alexander. We have Breakfast with the Grinch, Halloween at the Y. So we definitely have more events that are coming up this year.
If you guys get a chance to sneak in a father-daughter pajama thing, I'd love to embarrass my daughters. I would love the opportunity to embarrass my daughters. They're in their 20s. I mean, I don't get many opportunities like that anymore. But you're right. Get the footy pajamas or something. I don't know.
Something
embarrassing. You can help me find out. Yeah, pick it out of it. Stephanie, if people want to know more or maybe even add to these events or be a part of them, like with the annual golf outing or the Bridge to Bridge, are we still looking for sponsors? Are we still
Absolutely.
Taking it? Okay.
Yep, definitely. So if there are any businesses or individuals that want to be a part, if they want to volunteer or sponsor, you can be a cart sponsor, whole sponsor. You can definitely reach out to me, call the Y, or send me an email, slund@swcymca.org, and we would love to have more people involved in the community. Absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Stephanie. Thank you for the time.
Definitely.
Sarah, your turn.
Okay. Oh boy.
Sarah, I appreciate you being with us, and we don't get a chance to talk nearly enough, especially with what you do with the community. Community health worker. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to cover for one title and everything.
Right.
How's the job going? How are you enjoying that? Before we dive into some of the things that you're doing.
I'm enjoying it. It'll be a year this August.
I thought it was close to a year. Okay.
Yes, it'll be a year. And I've been enjoying it. Lots of learning and lots of figuring out. Part of my job is to provide resources to people in the community for needs that they mm-hmm. have. So it's been a learning curve to figure out what the needs are in the community and also what the needs are at the Y. Mm-hmm. And so it's been fun to meet all sorts of new people, go to different businesses and organizations within Wood County, make collaboration efforts. There's other CHWs or community health workers mm-hmm. through the county that I've been able to meet and slowly start to work with. It's kind of one of those positions that takes a little bit of time to get settled in and figure out. But I'm enjoying it. We have a lot of good things coming up this fall. I have been working with Stephanie on this Teen Wellness Day, as well as Renee Kinney, our wellness director. And we're planning this wellness day. It's Saturday, August 12th from 12:30 to 3, and it's for teens, youths 11 to 17 years old. And it's going to be a really fun day where youth can come, and we'll have different stations set up, different things like cornhole or pig tournaments, doing different exercise classes. We have our registered dietitian, Tiana, will be doing a little healthy snack with the kids, and they'll be able to enjoy that as well. So that's one of the events that's coming up.
Did this event stem from community feedback?
Right now we don't have a ton of teen programming, and so that was something that we wanted to focus in on, and we thought, well, let's start with a teen wellness day, see what kind of feedback we can get and involvement, and then hopefully reach some teens that would want to come back, and we can create more programs for them. So that's where this came from.
I appreciate that, Sarah. You really started this with the community, and what do you need? What is the community? And that's I think that's a great place to be, and a lot of nonprofits are in that spot, but that's where the community needs to jump in. We need feedback from you. We need to hear from you. When it comes to these events, not only do we need to hear from you, we need you to attend them.
Correct.
So it's the only way we really know if these events, nobody attended this, we don't need this maybe. Now, that can be, here or there. There's a lot of gray area in that. Mm-hmm. So the only thing we have is hearing from you and the why hearing from you. So we want to encourage people to do that. And your feedback is very important. And you never know the kind of events that can happen like this one from this. To me, not even being a teenager, but somebody that certainly cares about the youth, I think this is awesome. I think this is great. I would have attended this when I was a teenager.
Right. I have an 11-year-old at home, and I want him to go to this. We'll sign him up because it's just a good opportunity for kids to meet other kids their age, try out things at the Y that maybe they wouldn't be able to try out, do things like work in our teaching kitchen, which is a beautiful teaching kitchen. Mm-hmm. Tiana is a great cook. I've been able to enjoy some of her snacks. So I think the kids will have a lot of fun, and hopefully it's just a stepping stone for more teen programming at the Y.
We're talking about the youth. Let's go the other direction and talk about some of our older residents out there with the Stepping on Falls Prevention class.
Yeah, I did a Stepping on Falls Prevention class last March through May. Mm-hmm. It went really well. The feedback was that more people would like to see that. So I'm going to be offering one in the fall, maybe even in the spring as well. And what it, in essence, it does is it helps older adults navigate balance and strengthening their bodies so that they are just able to navigate the world in a better way, safer way. And it's a 7-week program. And the progress that the participants made last session was amazing. Oof. And also a lot of it is just a social connection with other people who are in similar situations. And then you also share different fall stories. And ironically, we all had them to share, even myself. It's something that can easily happen. And utilizing strength and balance exercises, and then also the social aspect of all being together, it really does help.
It also speaks again to that community feedback and how important that is. But I have to ask, Sarah, did you feel that you had to do the second class in autumn, like doing the fall prevention in the fall? Did you feel like you had... It's a bad joke. You do not have to laugh at that. But
I got it.
In all seriousness, I look at a class like this, and I think it's a nice reminder too to people like myself. Mm-hmm. When I think of my parents,
yeah,
I still think of my parents like they're my age now, like they're in their 40s and 50s.
They're stuck in that in your brain. Yeah.
Where they're retired now, and my dad, well, he fights it. He can't move the way he used to, and I help take care of my dad. Mm-hmm. And one of my biggest worries is him falling.
Right.
Like, and my father, a little scenario of him. He has been through it all. Sure. My father he was a former hockey player, former boxer. So just those things alone, what he's put his body through, let alone life and living in the streets and right. all that stuff. He can handle some stuff. He has been through it all. And now at this age, I'm worried about him falling 5 feet. Like, right. that's the big fear. And that's just me, his son.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine what he's going through, what he's mm-hmm. feeling, how that plays on his confidence, mm-hmm. how that plays on his self-worth. These things that are very, very, very important. And every human being has a right to have, especially right. people who have paid their dues, who are up there in that age and should be enjoying life and relaxing more now. Taking these classes gives you a little more confidence, it
Correct.
Seems, in
yeah.
that.
Definitely. And it gives you some actual hands-on tools for how to strengthen. They're very, very simplified exercises, strength and mobility exercises that anyone can do. You could sit in your chair and lift your leg up. I mean, I just fell this morning going up the stairs.
Like, it was a couple days ago for me.
And banged my finger. So it can happen to anybody, no matter mm-hmm. the age, and these are just things to be mindful of and bring to the forefront of your attention, just to slow down, mm-hmm. to look down when you're walking, to be prepared for weather, be prepared for when you're not at home and you're in the grocery store or it's a crowded area, mm-hmm. just all these things, and I think it just brings to the forefront to be mindful of that, and it helps, it does prevent falls, and September is Falls Prevention Month, which is right, why we would right. do it in the fall also.
Good choice.
Yes, exactly.
Timed out well.
Yes.
Part of what I like talking about with you too about Sarah, and I almost forgot about this, it's been a while since we've hung out, is mm-hmm. your insightfulness, because I think that one of the bigger things that's going to get people, we hope people take these classes right. to help them from preventing these things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the things that gets that person on the fence to lean over into it is, well, you know, I haven't seen so-and-so in a long time. Or it would be nice to not feel like I'm the only one dealing with this.
Right.
We get so in our own heads with this stuff. And, like, nobody else in history has ever had to worry about falling.
Right.
You know? Like,
right.
It seems silly on the surface talking about this, but in our own heads, we get like that.
Yeah.
Having more and more people around, having good instructors around, makes you feeling a little bit less like that. A little like, oh, everybody's dealing with this. You mm-hmm. might feel a little silly for a moment, but you get over that pretty quick.
Right.
And you get the information and the knowledge that you need to live your life happily and mm-hmm. enjoyable and hopefully with less fear involved yeah. in it. Another thing that can come up for anybody, no matter what the age range, blood pressure. And yep. you have a blood pressure monitoring class at ISE.
So I'm wrapping up the training for the blood pressure self-monitoring program that is through YUSA or Corporate Y, and I've been training on trying to bring that program to our YMCA. The blood pressure self-monitoring program is, in essence, a class that you can take. And it would probably, I haven't run it before, so this mm-hmm, is why I'm, mm-hmm. it's more
sure.
general. But
yeah.
I'm thinking it would probably be like a one-time workshop in the fall. Mm-hmm. And then mostly what it is teaching the participants how to take their blood pressure, how to take it accurately, mm-hmm. what kinds of signs to look out for if maybe there's a blood pressure spike mm-hmm. or what to do in those situations and how to kind of find a baseline for this is the range it could be in
yeah,
for you to
yeah.
feel better and then how to get there. And it would be some, I think every 2 weeks, it would be a 10-minute session with me one-on-one. And we would go over and I would just pretty much be making sure that
yeah.
they're doing it correctly. If they have any
mm-hmm.
questions, we'd be logging it. And I think it will be a really great asset to have in RY.
You know, especially when it comes to these things where, you may feel confident or good about something. It never hurts to have another set of eyes.
Right.
It never hurts to have somebody else being able to go over with you and like,
mm-hmm.
okay, I am doing this right.
Right.
Great. And it's not a huge dragged out process either.
Mm-hmm.
You're in, you're out, you figure out
Correct.
Those things and you're good. I do want to take a little time with healthy ideas.
Okay.
I'm a big promoter of mental health. I love talking about mental health whenever we have the opportunities, and here is a great one right over at the Y.
So Healthy Ideas is a new program that I will be offering in the fall. And in essence, Healthy Ideas stands for Identifying Depression, Empowering Activities for Seniors. Kind of a mouthful, but that's why it's an acronym.
It works, though.
And it, in essence, empowers older adults to manage their symptoms of depression through a behavioral activation approach. It encourages involvement in different meaningful activities. So what we do is identify the meaningful activities that are meaningful to that individual. It's very subjective. So for one person, it might be walking the dog to their mailbox every day. To another person, it might be making a phone call, sending a note to a friend, going to their granddaughter's soccer game. All of these things can encourage somebody to make steps in a healthy direction, and especially depression is so different for everybody, and everybody deals with it in a different way. But what we're seeing is that older adults are maybe dealing with more depression because of isolation, because they're lonely. They maybe don't have anybody checking in on them. So this program itself would be some sort of class or workshop that they could come and take at the Y, and then it would be a one-on-one with me to kind of go over, well, how can we find these things that motivate you? How can we go over things that make you happy? And then what are the steps to get to that happy place? So it's breaking it down and spending more time with them.
I so much appreciate so much what you were describing there. And it reminded me of this a person I've been talking to, I look up to a lot in radio. And he's retired now. He's in his later 60s. And we were talking about a couple of things, and I can't remember exactly how it came up, but he made a joke about possibly being autistic and said, oh, no. And I said, well, you know, you should look into that. And I don't think that's anything to laugh at and stuff. And he goes, well, no, they didn't have that when I was born. They didn't. I'm like, no, they did, man. Like, yeah, they did.
They did.
They've always had these things, all these things in this different, everything under that umbrella, and really anything under the mental health umbrella has always existed. We're just now starting to diagnose some of this stuff. And I think of that older generation and the older generations that have gone undiagnosed, that may be dealing with things that they don't even realize they're dealing with. So, I mean, I think that, hey, your car could always use a tune-up. You know, it's never a bad idea to do that. You treat your car better than you. Treat yourself this way, too.
Right.
Treat your brain
that
way.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah, it can't hurt.
And I think these programs, these types of programs that are targeting older adults and combating the loneliness and the depression, are all shining a light to see those things that have always been there.
Yeah, well said. We just got a minute or two, but I did want to take a moment to touch on Big for Life Parkinson's program. Wonderful to see a Parkinson's program. Not that we need one. That's not wonderful, obviously, but it's great to see some attention being brought to that subject.
Right. So I had met this woman, Heather McCarthy. She is a physical therapist at Marshfield Clinic, and she brought this program to me and said, I'd really love to run this at your Y. And I said, well, I'd love for you to run it then. And so she's actually partnering with Elizabeth Ironside, who's also a physical therapist at Aspires Clinic. And both of these physical therapists will be running this program at our Y in the fall. So look out for that. We don't have all the details yet, but it will be a really great addition to our programs.
Absolutely. It's another one of those things where the Y is covering all bases. Doing a darn good job at it. Stephanie, if people have follow-up questions, want to know more, maybe they want to volunteer, how can they reach you?
They can definitely just call the Y and ask for me. Otherwise, my email address is slund@swcymca.org, or you can call me at 715-697-3985.
Sarah, same question.
All right. My email is Wheeler, W-H-E-E-L-E-R, at southwoodcountyymca.org. And my phone number is 608-673-7247.
And again, that website for the Y, you can find out more information at swcymca.org. Say hi to everybody over there for us, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you. Sounds good. Thanks.
We'll be back next week with more Midday Magazine right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
We're not comfortable.
No, don't.
turn on the AC. It costs a fortune to run that old thing. Remember, we only run it when it's like 85 degrees outside, and we turn it off when it's 80 in the house. We can't afford to run it any more than that. Mommy and Daddy had to stick a lot of money in it last year because of a leak.
Wait, you put money in the air conditioner?
Not exactly, but it seems that way to me.
Don't they make better ones now? They make better cars. Isn't that why you bought a new car last year? Because it costs a lot to fix it?
Well, yes. And I suppose they make better ACs now. I wonder how much a new one costs.
Call Tri-City Services for a free quote to replace that air conditioner that feels like it costs a fortune to operate. Tri-City has great financing options to qualified credit.